Well, it's the remarkable year of 2020, and it's still not over as we take this, but I just like to spend a few minutes sharing with you a little bit about not only the life of my father, but my own perspective of the times that he lived in, we lived in, and that we are currently facing, to sort of personalize rather than simply give an editorial comment on that. This would be the year, if my father were alive, that he would turn 100 years old. And by any standard, that also seems to suggest that I'm a little bit older than I'd like to admit. My memories may be a bit jaded in some places, but I'll try to kind of reflect the experience of what I think was a pretty remarkable person. My father was born in 1920 of an Italian immigrant father who had come to America after learning his masonry trade and spending 3.5, nearly 4 years in the Italian army fighting in Tripoli. And so he was only 19 years old where he ventured to Ellis Island in New York and matriculated his way into Roxbury, Massachusetts, where he would raise 2 children and with his wife, my grandmother Regina. 1920, of course, was the end of a remarkable age, the legendary Roaring Twenties that were sort of the follow-up to America's first entree onto the national scene as a power, as a military and economic power. And the 1920s would also bring in its share of cultural changes, or radical cultural changes, perhaps maybe not to the extent that we would see in the 1960s, or I would certainly state we're seeing here in the 20s. But nevertheless, a significant time. My introduction to thinking about the span of my father's life, which began in 1920 and would end in 1985, at a relatively young age. But I think my father was certainly able to affect some pretty powerful experiences and values on the 3 children that he and my mother would have. My brother Philip and my late sister Doreen certainly were affected by his experience and his passions and his values to a significant degree. In an effort to kind of think about the essence of this man, I'd like to kind of propose a bit of an outline that, you know, when I first opened my current practice, the Center for Psychology and Faith, my motto was assisting people in developing hope, perseverance, and trust. And I don't think that was purely a marketing tool. I think those 3 themes were really how I would sum up my father's sense of being my father. That he was dedicated, I think, to all 3 of his children, assisting them in developing hope, perseverance, and trust. What do I really mean by that? We'll take some explaining, or I guess the new word I'm hearing these days is mansplaining, so I'll give that a try. Hope, I think, for my father clearly was in contrast with the sort of modern ideal of optimism. I don't think you could describe my father as a particular cynic or a skeptic, but he certainly wasn't a wild-eyed optimism and always spun things in a positive way. I think my father was also not a stoic, in that he was looking for the inevitability of human suffering, but he was aware that suffering was an integral part of the human experience, and he knew suffering in his own experience. I know that that his cousin Tony would die of a throat infection, like so many pre-antibiotics. He died at a remarkably young age, and I know that shook my father at his foundations. Or his closest friend, the boyhood contracting polio and being left with braces that he would carry throughout his life. He obviously was exposed as he began to develop the skills of adolescence and even young adulthood. He was exposed to first the Great Depression and then the onset of World War II. And so from this generation, there was a harsh realism, I think. But the harshness was clearly tempered by hope, primarily hope. This idea of faith in the future came from the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And my father, without very much explaining, clearly made it known to me that he would have several encounters with the Lord and come to an appreciation of faith as he entered into young adulthood. And he began to he needed to confront, as most of us do at some point in our life, some destructive forces, some areas of vulnerability in which he was moving away from the deeper parts of the self and being vulnerable to the kind of darkness that the culture can sometimes offer. And so I think the more he was exposed to the Christian worldview, the more that he was particularly inspired by the Catholic form of that view, the more his life began to change, and that he began to seek opportunities to bring hope to others. So I can tell you that there were members of my family growing up who suffered from serious illnesses, who would ultimately pass away from those illnesses. But my father seemed to draw nearer to them. And in contrast, that would be where he would spend much of his energy. He also had a particular dedication to youth sports, and my father had a phenomenal passion for baseball and teaching the game. And he taught the game in a very unique way. I know to this day he remains nearly 50 years since he, began working. He still remains a controversial figure in his town. It seems that my father would particularly relish taking not highly developed players who could barely play the game, and that they would learn to play the position with him. And he took great delight in teaching them these intricate backups so that the inevitable scattered play of his teams would still allow opportunities to secure outs and to build a kind of teamwork. If you could swing the bat, you certainly got a chance to play, and everybody played on my father's teams. But if you didn't swing the bat very well and your hand-eye coordination was poor, and he would have many of those individuals, he became very aggressive in using the bunt and running the bases in the style of Little League baseball, and did some very unique things. And so his teams were always in contention for championships, and they won many of them, despite having probably the least talent in the division. He coached a team called the Dodgers, and he took wonderful joy and pride in that. And he asked only support for one another. The thing that you didn't want to do was to criticize and have players criticize one another. This whole idea of how you root for someone and support someone, and even if they're playing and you're not at the time, was particularly important with my father. And I heard many of his, as I would watch the game from behind a fence or in distance. I would be particularly impressed with that. So hope, in contrast to optimism, led to knowledge not only of the resurrection of Christ, but that the life of Christ, the historicity of Jesus' ministry, which lasted only 3 years, but to we still base primarily, at least this culture, despite some efforts to revise this, we're still basically in debt to him for how we view time in human history. Christ remains at the center. We talk about Anno Domini, after Christ, and we talk about BC, before Christ. Pretty remarkable situation where this man in an isolated and captive part of the world could command that much interest and impact. Without press, without an army, without political power. Yet today, all of history turns on this one individual. No one even comes close. Is that just a historical sort of cosmic accident? You have to ultimately decide. But the evidence that this human being would have an impact on all of our lives, not only my father, seems to be pretty significant case. It's certainly a case worth exploring at the deepest levels of your being. Because as we begin to contemplate the resurrection of Jesus Christ and ultimately our invitation to eternal life, if we really embrace that and believe that, our encounters with our own suffering inevitably must be different. So my father talked about the idea of hope. He also talked about the idea of, as I mentioned in this motto, the whole idea of perseverance. It's a cultural word that we don't hear very much. Sometimes we use clinical terms like the person's obsessive or a workaholic. Sometimes perseverance is thought of as a weakness. You're being stubborn, being resistive. You have a one-track mind. But how does one's integrity, your own unique personhood, persevere in a culture that seems to want to shape them for its own purposes? How does one persevere in life? That's a profound challenge, I think, and a very interesting thought. You know, Admiral Bull Halsey, certainly a figure in my father's era, the great admiral in World War II, once said that there were three things that he had learned in life. That he learned that it was more important to tell the truth than to lie. That it was better to know than to be ignorant. And that it was better to be free than to be a slave. As we see the events of history that particularly permeated in the Great Generation, I can't help but think of how much traction and power that really had and must have had. the shaping of Admiral Halsey's life. And it led him to conclude at the time of his own retirement that if he was being honored and his great military accomplishments were being revered by the culture, Halsey noted that, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said that there are no extraordinary men in reality. Only profoundly challenging conditions that ordinary men rise to meet. But that's really the human destiny. We see all the sacrifice that people make, mothers, fathers, medical care workers, first responders, the more contemporary term, just decent human beings who have great dignity as they live their life in perspective, who do the best they can with what they have, no matter what those challenges are. Those are ordinary men facing extraordinary challenges, and their journey should bring and foster hope, faith, and the greatest of these, as Scripture tells us, love itself. You know, part of what helped my father persevere is a phenomenon that as a therapist I see less and less of. And that is, and I believe actually with great negative consequences. But my father grew up in an era where the hero, not the anti-hero, not the irreverent skeptic or cynic that portrays himself as, you know, a master of humor and or shock value, but people of heroic virtue, of heroic courage. And if you knew my father for any length of time, it wouldn't be very long that he would drift over to some of these heroes, and there are too many to mention, but I can particularly remember my father's great respect for a Hall of Fame second baseman with the Red Sox by the name of Bobby Dorr, who just passed away, lived to be 100 years old. Bobby Dorr is in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but Bobby Dorr was the captain of the Red Sox during that, my father's young adulthood, and was a man of remarkable grace and elegance and kindness, who took care of his wife for over 70 years as she suffered from disabling multiple sclerosis, and yet his dedication was quiet but steady and profound. It was certainly a beautiful thing. I remember my father's admiration for people like Benny Goodman, the great musician who seemed to transcend the boundaries of his music and art form in ways that would inspire that generation. And you know, as we look together at the genres of music that sort of reach beyond just melody and composition but seem to stir emotion in people, my father would have had an experience with him. You know, the King of Swing, they called him, I guess, Benny Goodman. I remember as a young child his respect for a Catholic priest, which is a remarkable thing when you think about it. This Catholic priest was Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who in the early days of television was on in prime time on Saturday evening when there were only three television networks. And one year he had the highest rated show in all of TV. All he did was use a piece of chalk and a blackboard, and in a very flamboyant and eloquent style, talk not so much about religion per se, because his audience certainly transcended the Catholic folks, but he talked about the great philosophical issues and concerns of the time. if you ever heard Fulton Sheen talk about the intellectual giants of the past, or talk about his concerns about the power of fascism, or in particular communism, and the great threats that that had on the human heart and the human soul, you realize these things. You know, it's amazing these men of power. Obviously, as a young boy, I had, when he was on, I would hear him, as then I would watch my father intently listening to him, and I would be fascinated, even though I had no ability to really comprehend what he was talking about. I knew there was something special there. I remember the great laughter that my father had, and joy that Laurel and Hardy's comedy would bring, or the characters of Jackie Gleason during that period, and the Honeymooner show, or the variety show that he would have on many levels of TV. And so these things were not peripheral to life. It seemed to me to be one of the ways that he healed, one of the ways that it brought perspective. Now, as he labored with the trying to raise a family and support it, and being a mason, and lugging those cement blocks and what have you. So he was passionate about those things. Early on in my life, my father made the epic move from living with his parents and in a young marriage in Roxbury and moving to Pembroke, which we had a small cottage at the time, and he renovated it enough so that it became our year-round home. And my father became extremely active in the community, and even after medical disabilities began to set in, much of his life was devoted to public service, in town politics, and arguing with people, and enjoying the debates in the coffee shop and at the town hall. And my father certainly never lacked for an opinion about those times. And I think that was pretty amazing. So my father was a gentleman who loved math and the preciseness of it. And he liked to think about what the church talked about in terms of its belief, its objective truth, the dogma and doctrine in which to guide on life. You know, I heard a senator a few years ago say with alarm, as a criticism, that that he was afraid that your dogma lives loudly within you, as though that were a bad thing. Because, of course, viewing dogma as something that's constrictive and restrictive and taking away your objectivity. Truth, objective truth, the deepest forms of ethics that inform our conscience should live loudly within us. That's the tragedy of our times, that we would somehow worship the pragmatist, not the idealist, not the individual with deep convictions. And my father, for better or for worse, right or wrong, was a man of great convictions. And I know that I personally love and revere him for that. And finally, there was the whole issue of trust. I think my father recognized human frailty. I think he recognized it in his own life. He recognized it in his own friend. That good people could still make mistakes. That we were all, in effect, sinners. And so I think my father could be very opinionated and at times react angrily, there was a pathway through his faith that would soften his heart after a bit, and he would learn to put those mistakes into perspective. I think he had the ability to understand the sort of oft-quoted sentiment in my generation, you know, therefore but for the grace of God go I. I think he saw that. And I think that helped him be aware of a changing world and a changing culture that he was not opposed to, railing against in his own way, but nevertheless recognized that we needed to talk about it and look and embrace with those things. So here in 100 years, I'd like to say goodbye once again to my father and look forward to our reuniting. I certainly wonder how this, for him, this lifetime Democrat would judge the Republican Party of today and the President of the United States currently, and I suspect he might surprise a lot of people who remember the kinds of rhetoric and belief systems that he had before. But it certainly would be interesting to know. And one thing I would be confident about is that we would get to know. So goodbye, Dad. And I look forward to saying hello. What's up? With that somewhat sentimental attachment, I will conclude my little dissertation and tribute to him. Thanks.